And now, the line between an epidemic and a national emergency. President Trump's drug commission recently called on him to declare a national emergency to deal with the opioid crisis. An initial report from the commission says the 142 deaths each day from drug overdoses mean the death toll is equal to September 11th every 3 weeks. But yesterday, Trump declined to declare that epidemic an emergency. GLT's Ryan Denham talks with Twin Cities health professionals about this development and how big a problem opioid abuse has become in McLean County.
McLean County Coroner Kathy Davis, we'll start with you. What are opioids and what drugs fall into that category?
So opioids are synthetic or naturally occurring products derived from the poppy plant. So they're used as pain medications. So in the prescribed lower dose, they usually help with euphoria and kind of feel as if they take the pain away, but it's more of a sedating type effect. Gotcha. If used correctly, it gives you kind of like euphoria and you just don't worry about the pain as much.
A national CDC study showed that 25% of all drug overdose deaths were related to heroin in 2015. And that number was just 6% back in 1999. The CDC has even declared this an epidemic. So why have opioids emerged as such a public health threat?
I think one thing is the accidental overprescription. So when opioids first came out as pain medications used by Purdue Pharma in 1996, they were considered, so they came out with OxyContin. They came out as a slow-release pain medication, and that the only patient that could overdose or gain a tolerance was over long-term use. Well, you know, fast forward to 4 years after that, they realized that they were having overdoses on it, that it opioids bind to the breathing receptors of the brain, and they were supposed to be 12-hour acting medications, when actually they weren't 12 hours, they were a little bit shorter, and so then a patient would take one more, and then all of a sudden we have the overdoses. So in 4 years after Purdue Pharma came out with OxyContin, it went from you know, not making any money to $1 billion, but Purdue Pharma, per research and data, they have been sued, and they did say that the medication wasn't as it was supposed to be.
So how prevalent are opioids here in McLean County? How many overdose deaths have we had in the last few years?
So in 2015, we had 19 overdose deaths. In 2016, we had 16, so steady. But right now, we've had 7, and it's just half the year. Hmm. So but it is fentanyl and methadone and oxycodone and morphine. And then the big drugs are starting to come out of the synthetic opioids.
Well, let's bring Joan Hartman into the discussion. Joan is the Vice President of Behavioral Health at Chestnut Health Systems, which provides addiction counseling and treatment services. So Joan, what are the primary interventions that health professionals use to respond to the opioid epidemic?
We use a lot of evidence-based treatments, and those include treatments like motivational interviewing, cognitive behavioral therapy, and those are the basis of all of our interventions that we use. We have various levels of intervention. It could, depending on the person's need, you could go to outpatient treatment, come in up to 9 hours a week in outpatient, or you could come in for detoxification, which is a medical process where you receive medications to help with withdrawal and things like that, or residential treatment, which could be up to 28 days.
So Joan, what does today's average heroin user look like in Illinois? Is this, how old are they? Is it a man or a woman? Where do they live? Is it a big city, a small town? What is this person?
What we see mostly in Illinois is primarily white men and women in their late 20s, and they're now living outside of urban areas. And so it's moved from where back in the 90s it was mostly inner city, low income individuals, and now it's, you know, moderate, medium income people in their late or mid to late 20s living in more rural and suburban areas.
So this is GLT's Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. I'm talking about the opioid epidemic with McLean County Coroner Kathy Davis and Joan Hartman, Vice President of Behavioral Health at Chestnut Health Systems. Yesterday, President Trump declined to declare a national emergency related to opioids, going against the recommendation of his own commission that's chaired by New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, that would have allowed the Trump administration to remove some barriers and waive some federal rules, such as one that restricts where Medicaid recipients can receive addiction treatment. Trump seems to favor an abstinence approach to drug use, keeping young people off drugs from the start, combined with harsher sentencing in drug cases. Kathy, what did you think of this idea of potentially declaring this a national emergency and ultimately of President Trump's decision to go in another direction and not to do so?
You know, it's a catch-22. So it could have been declared a national emergency, but, you know, I agree with prevention, not getting people on opioids, not getting them addicted to heroin. So education, I think is, you know, educating the consumer, the patient or the addict, education to the physicians, to the pharmacists, to everyone involved. So yes, not to take drugs, not to get there. Or if you do have to take an opioid for a pain from a surgery or a fracture, to start low and go slow on the medications instead of prescribing a lot. Also, you know, there's different types of therapy that they can use. But by the same token, you have to realize that there's a problem out there. So I don't know what they wanted. I'm not well versed on if they had declared it a national emergency, what were they going to do? What would be the after effect? Would they take, you know, opioids or pain meds out of the equation and where it would be difficult to prescribe? Joan probably sees that some of these patients do need the pain medications, that the health insurance does need to pay for some of them. So it can't be the one extreme or the other. There's got to be a happy medium on how to take care of these patients, and then, you know, how to not prescribe it, but also if they're prescribed, how to take care of it. So it can't be an end-all be-all.
Joan, what about you? What were your thoughts on the Trump administration's moves on this yesterday?
I didn't see a big benefit in declaring it an epidemic. You know, the CDC talks about an epidemic is usually something that's short-term, and this is not necessarily something that is short term. It's something that we've been dealing with for years, and it's not going to be solved in the next 6 months. And really, the biggest benefit to declaring it, that would be access to funds. Well, that fund only has $57,000 in it. So it's not like they're, you know, at the end of 2016, it only had $57,000 in that fund. So it's not like there's going to be a lot of money they're going to be able to access to address the issue.
So, Joan, what are some things that lawmakers, either in Congress or even here in Illinois, could do to actually make things better?
You know, I really agree with the report and the recommendations to start really enforcing parity, because there are a lot of insurance companies who won't pay for detox services for opioid dependents because it's not life-threatening. But, you know, if you talk with someone who has an addiction to an opioid, it feels pretty life-threatening when they're going through withdrawal. If you look at the fact that they're going through, if you experienced the flu, multiply that by 10, and that's what withdrawal from an opioid feels like. And so if someone's going through that, they're likely to say, you know what, if I just take another dose of whatever I'm on, the opioid, I'll feel better. They're going to do that rather than go through that uncomfortableness. And so I really think that, you know, enforcing parity, making sure that it gets paid for. We have to stop kind of playing the shell game where we just move money from one pot to another in order to address this. And we also have to fund the Medicaid, because Medicaid has been the biggest, lack of funds has been the biggest barrier to people receiving help. And so Medicaid has increased the ability for people to receive treatment services. And so that's, I think, one of the biggest areas is funding and parity.
So, Kathy, you've researched this issue quite a bit. You've spoken to different groups about it. Is this a problem we can kind of get back ahead of, and what can we do to kind of get back on top of it?
Well, that's a great question. I think it would be if, you know, what we're doing right now with you and Jones here is educating the public on what's going on. I think we can't bury our head in the sand anymore, and we need to let it be known that people are here to help you. It is an addiction, it is an illness, and we want to do life-saving measures to get them off the medications. And if they can't get off, how can they live a happy life on perhaps lesser of the pain meds without going to the harder drugs such as heroin or you know, there's new synthetic opioids out there to try to get people more addicted with the fentanyls, the synthetic fentanyls and to the heroin. We want people taken care of is what we want, and I don't want to see any more deaths. And educating that one additional pain med, because they're such strong type medications that they bind to the breathing receptors of the brain, and you stop breathing if you take one, you know, so you get the euphoria, you don't remember if you took a pain med or not, and so you take an additional one, and that additional one could kill you. And that's the scary part of it, I think.
Well, I certainly don't want to insinuate that an overdose death is the only outcome here to worry about. I mean, the addiction itself is bad enough.
Right,
What does that aftermath look like, though? You've had conversations with these families that have suffered, the worst possible outcome with an accidental overdose. What are those conversations like? What do they see?
Well, and you see some where they have locked up the drugs, you know, from their family members, and someone is counting out the medications for them, and the body just can't handle, and you know, they can't handle it anymore, and the breathing receptors, they just stop breathing, and it's devastating. They really thought they were doing the correct right thing, and they were working with their medical provider. And it's just really sad and devastating. And like Joan said, it's across the board. It's wealthy. It's people that don't have money. It's everyone, and it's very devastating. And then the ones that are addicts, I don't think they want to be there. You know, there's many, many stories out there that you hear. Gosh, I don't want to be like this anymore.
I want people to understand that recovery is there for everybody, and that it doesn't matter. We have to stop looking at this as somebody else's problem. These people are our brothers, our sisters, our kids. They're our neighbors. They're the people that we talk to every day that we don't know are struggling with issues like this. And we have to stop making judgment calls on them, and we have to start reaching out and making sure that they get the help that they need. And that recovery is possible for everybody. Research shows that. Recovery is possible for everybody.
That's Joan Hartman, Vice President of Behavioral Health at Chestnut Health Systems. She's joined today by McLean County Coroner Kathy Davis. I'm Ryan Denham.
You can find a link to the new report issued by the White House's Commission on Combating Drug Addiction and the Opioid Crisis on our website, wglt.org.